Chapter 8. Jed Learns the Truth. Jonathan had decided to break into Roper's office as soon as he had learned that Roper was leaving Crystal with Corcoran and Langbourne. On the morning they left, Jed and Caroline went out on the horses with all the children. Since arguing with Roper about Caroline, Jed had been strangely quiet, Jonathan noticed. She seemed to watch everyone a lot more, and she did not say very much. I wonder if Caroline Langbourne has told her the truth about Roper, he thought. He planned the break-in carefully, first taking Daniel on a long climb up a hill the day before Roper left and picking some flowers.
Who are they for?
Asked Daniel, but Jonathan did not answer. Jonathan had to go through Roper and Jed's bedroom to get to Roper's office. He entered the bedroom quietly with the flowers in his hand and a lockpick in his pocket. The windows were open and the room was filled with light. On the table next to Roper's side of the bed lay magazines and books about antiques. There were several notebooks and pens. On Jed's side, he could see the shape left by her sleeping body. On her table lay books about horses and furniture and houses. There were photos, too, of young people laughing in restaurants and Roper in a swimming pool. As he looked down at it all, Jonathan realized that he was not there just to find Roper's secrets. He wanted to know Jed's secrets even more, and what held her and Roper together. He put the flowers in a glass on a table and picked up Jed's pillow, pressing it to his face. He could smell smoke and guessed that she and Caroline were up late last night talking by the fire. He pushed open the door to Roper's large walk-in clothes cupboard. He looked at the rows of expensive suits and expensive English leather shoes. "Does Roper go to England much?" he had once asked Jed. "Oh, no," she had replied, as if she did not care, but for some reason he did not believe her.
"Money problems or something. Why don't you ask him?"
The door to the office was in front of him. Roper had locked it, of course. Jonathan listened. He could hear cleaners' voices and the sounds of their work, but nothing else. He reached for the lockpick and put it into the lock. His heart was going very fast. "You're breaking into Roper's office," he kept thinking. "You're using a lockpick and breaking into his office. You're breaking into it now." The door opened. Nothing had broken and no one was shouting at him. Then suddenly he heard a car outside. He looked out of the window, but it was just the bread arriving. He heard Burr's voice in his head. "Don't go in there. It's too much of a risk." It was just an ordinary little office for doing deals and making money. There was no expensive antique furniture in here, just an ordinary desk below the window. On the desk lay a letter signed Anthony about his money problems. The words of the letter were angry. "Don't read it, just photograph it," Jonathan told himself. He undid his pen, pulled out the small camera and took a photo of the letter. There were more papers inside the desk, full of numbers and names and amounts of money. He calmly photographed them too. When he had finished, he moved away from the desk, his face wet from the heat. And then he saw it. A single golden brown hair lying across the papers. Immediately, he was angry with her.
"You do know what he does,"
he thought. You lied to me. You're together with him in this big, dirty arms drugs deal. At the same time, he was pleased that she was taking the same journey as him, only without Burr or Rook to help her. But suddenly, he was frightened too. Not for himself, but for Jed. You stupid woman, he thought. Have you ever seen a woman after she has been punched so hard in the face that it killed her? Jonathan put the hair carefully in his shirt pocket, and he was pulling out some more papers when he heard the sound of horses outside. Then he heard Jed shouting and Daniel crying. Stay calm, he thought. He put the camera pen back in his pocket and shut the office door behind him, locking it with the lockpick. He moved quietly through the walk-in cupboard back into the bedroom and heard Jed coming fast and heavily up the stairs in her riding boots. Should he go back into the cupboard? No, hiding wasn't the answer. He wanted to meet her. He waited next to the flowers. When Jed entered, her face was hot and angry. She started speaking as soon as she saw him.
Thomas, please will you teach Daniel not to cry every time he hurts himself? Maybe he will listen to you. Actually, Thomas, what are you doing in our room?
I brought you some flowers from our climb yesterday, he said.
Why didn't you give them to the cleaners to put here? She asked.
Then she looked down at the bed and yesterday's clothes, which were lying on a chair.
Flowers or no flowers, she said. You shouldn't be in here. Get out.
But he was calm and worried for her, and this made him stronger than her. Close the door, he said finally. There's something I have to say to you. He looked at her and he could see that she was not sure. But she closed the door. I can't stop thinking about you, he said. I go to sleep and think about you. I wake up and think about you. A lot of the time I argue with you. I don't understand it. I've never heard you say anything clever. Most of what you say is rubbish, but every time I think of something funny, I need to share it with you. And when I'm unhappy, I need you to make me smile again. But I don't know you at all. I don't know if you're here for Roper's money or because you love him. And I don't think that you know either. They were his own words. He was not acting now. She closed her eyes and was quiet for a few moments. Then she opened them again and touched her face with her hand as if she had been hit.
That's the rudest thing anyone has said to me ever, she said.
Neither of them spoke.
Thomas, she said.
Jonathan said nothing.
Thomas, this is Roper's house, she said.
It's Roper's house and you're Roper's girl. But you don't want to be now, do you? He said. Roper is a crook, as I'm sure Caroline Langbourne has told you. He sells arms and he murders people. That's why people like you and me are watching him and leaving bits of ourselves in his office. He lifted her hair from his pocket. If he saw your hair on his papers, then he would know that you were in his office. He would kill you for that. That's what he does. He kills. He waited for her to speak, but she did not move, and her face was very white. I'll go and speak to Daniel then, he said. Where is he? That night at 12:30 a.m, he heard someone knock on the door of his cottage in Crystal. They've come for me, he thought, and he came to the door with a knife in his hand. She's told them. and now I'm finished. Hello? He called from behind the door. He was surprised to hear Jed's voice answer. He opened the door and she entered dressed in a dark shirt and skirt. Did anyone see you? Caroline? Daniel? He asked, quickly shutting the door.
No one, she said. I was very quiet. No one heard me. Daniel did a painting for me to say sorry.
I know, I heard you telling Roper on the phone. What else did you tell him? Said Jonathan.
Nothing, she said. What should I tell him? That you called me stupid and him a murderer?
Jonathan did not reply.
How the hell did I get into this? She said then. With Roper, I mean.
Then she told him everything. How she had met Roper at the horse sale in France, and how he had helped her to escape from a difficult time in her life.
But Caroline's told me that he sells arms, she said.
She stared at him.
I'm in a lot of trouble, she said. I'm a crook's girl. I walked into this with my eyes closed.
Hours later, he took her upstairs to the bedroom and lay next to her without touching her. He told her who he was and that he was watching Roper as part of an operation. He told her about Sophie. She left the cottage early in the morning and came back the next night. They talked a lot more about their lives and about Roper, and then they kissed for the first time. Roper returned a week later with Corcoran and Langbourne, and that afternoon they gave Jonathan a new passport with the name Derek S. Thomas on it. Jonathan practiced signing the name on a piece of paper. When he was ready, he signed the name in the passport. Langbourne took it, closed it, and gave it to Roper. I thought it was mine, to keep, said Jonathan. Why did you think that? Said Langbourne. We've got a job for you, said Roper in a kinder voice. After you've done it, you can go. What kind of job? Asked Jonathan carefully. We're going to give you a company, replied Roper, smiling. You'll be travelling and doing a lot of deals. It's exciting, but you'll need to keep it a secret. But first, we need you to sign some documents for us. Roper called his secretary, and she came in with some papers, which she put on the table. They were accounts for a company called Trade Paths. Jonathan signed them. Then Roper showed him a document that gave him the business with all the money that Trade Paths owned and had borrowed and all its risks. Jonathan signed that too. Enjoyed being alone, did we, old love? Corcoran asked him. He was sitting in Jonathan's garden, drinking a beer. Very much, replied Jonathan. Yes, everyone says you enjoyed it. Tabby says you enjoyed it. Most of the island think you enjoyed it. He was silent for a moment. Jonathan said nothing. Then Corcoran suddenly said, Anyway, I have a message from the boss. It's time to say goodbye to Crystal and everyone else on it. Where am I going? Asked Jonathan. Corcoran looked at Jonathan as if he hated him. Then he jumped up and turned towards the beach. To the next meeting instead of me, that's where you're going. I tell him that you're bad, but he doesn't believe me. He loves you. You saved his boy. Me? I'm just old news. Two nights Jed came to you, I heard. I want to tell him, but he'll kill her, and I don't want that. But someone will tell him, old love. Just you wait. Autumn rain was falling in London as Rex Goodhue decided to go to war. One morning, the week before, two drivers in white trucks had nearly killed him while he was riding his bike. Goodhue knew it had been no accident. That same afternoon, he gave Burr's agency 10 offices in his government building in Whitehall for the Operation Limpet team to use. The next day, he took away any telephones that the River House could listen to and had all the computers checked. Every evening after work, he went straight to Burr's office. "I'm going to destroy their Operation Flagship," he told Burr one evening. "You know Harry Palfrey. He's an advisor to the government and knows Darker. Well, he has told me about Flagship. It's a name that Darker and his team have given themselves. If you're not in Flagship, you won't be given any information. But Darker won't have a team left when I've finished with him, and Roper will be safely in prison." Burr listened to Goodhue's story about the bike and agreed that Jeffrey Darker was trying to threaten him. He had been careful himself, driving his children to school in the mornings and getting them in the evenings. "But Goodhue doesn't know how bad the corruption really is," he thought later. 3 times already he had been told by Whitehall that he could not see documents that he had asked for. "You mean their Operation Flagship?" Burr had shouted at the secretary the 3rd time it happened.
"Operation what, sir?" said the secretary.
But the information still came quickly to Operation Limpet from Burr's and Strelsky's agents. Roper's deal was definitely happening. 6 container ships were sailing across the Atlantic Ocean to the island of Curaçao near Venezuela to arrive in about a week's time.
"Apostol says that Roper's buying American arms," Strelsky told Burr on the phone from Miami. "But we don't know where they will do the exchange."
Then, the next day, Strelsky rang to give Burr more information.
"The cartels are sending their drugs from Buenaventura in Colombia," he said.
Strelsky had heard that 100 Colombian army trucks and tanks were in Buenaventura. The Colombian government were helping the cartels with the operation. But when he asked for photographs of the tanks, he was told that he could not have them.
"The CIA cannot give them to us because they are Operation Flagship," he told Burr on the phone.
"Then Flagship includes the CIA too," Burr thought angrily.
The next day, Burr got Jonathan's photographs from Roper's office and showed them to Goodhue. Seeing the names of the people included in Roper's deals made Goodhue feel sick. It was not just the corruption of a huge number of important people, it was also the number of big, old companies with good names who were making a lot of money from those deals. After this, Goodhue stopped trusting anyone, and he started to look at the people in Whitehall with new eyes.
"Are you another of them?" he asked himself quietly each day as he watched the ministers calmly eating their lunch in the dining room. "Are you? Are you?"